Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with growing doubts about why Donald Trump is meeting with Putin in Helsinki and what is the nature of their relationship. Malcolm Nance, a career U.S. intelligence officer and author of The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West, joins us to discuss the extraordinary disconnect between the latest indictments by Robert Mueller of 12 Russian military intelligence GRU officers and the Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats' warning that the red light is blinking, as it was before 9/11, warning that, quote, today the digital infrastructure that serves this country is literally under attack by Russia, and our president's eagerness to get along with Putin, who orchestrated the meddling in our 2016 elections and is now orchestrating Russia's ongoing cyber attacks on our infrastructure and election systems. When asked by CBS News what is the biggest foe America faces globally, the first thing out of Trump's mouth was the European Union, not Russia. And we will examine the evidence which suggests Trump is either Putin's useful idiot or a traitor who has bought into Russia's agenda, which, if true, would make Putin Trump's case officer and the spymaster behind the most significant intelligence operation since the Germans sent Lenin in a boxcar to Russia in 1917. Then we'll go to London to speak with Polly Toynbee, a columnist with The Guardian and the author of Dismembered, How the Attack on the State Harms Us All. She joins us to examine the trail of wreckage in Donald Trump's wake as he trashed NATO, undermined the women leading Germany and the UK by, in effect, campaigning on behalf of their political opposition, then advised Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May to sue the EU rather than negotiate with them over Brexit. We will also assess the impact of massive demonstrations in London and Scotland and the indignation felt by many in response to Trump posing smugly in Winston Churchill's armchair. Then finally, we'll get an analysis of the radical break from traditional U.S. foreign policy and diplomacy, with the president intent on destroying treaties, alliances, democratic institutions, and diplomatic norms, and speak with Stephen Walt, professor of international affairs at Harvard University and author of the forthcoming book, The Hell of Good Intentions, America's Foreign Policy Elite and the Decline of U.S. Primacy. We'll discuss how discredited ideas and policies and blunders like Iraq ironically contributed to Trump's election, which has led to a dramatic worsening of these trends. And joining us now is Malcolm Nance, a career counterterrorism and intelligence officer with the U.S. government special operations, homeland security, and intelligence agencies, who has over 33 years of experience in combating radical extremism. He's the author of The Plot to Hack America, How Putin, Cyber Spies, and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. And his latest book is The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. Welcome to Background Briefing, Malcolm Nance.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks, Malcolm. And I'm absolutely dismayed at this disconnect between you've got Robert Mueller indicting 12 GRU Russian military intelligence officers for hacking the DNC, the DCCC, and Hillary Clinton. You've got the DNI, Dan Coats, a Republican senator, warning that the digital infrastructure that serves this country is literally under attack. And he's compared the situation today as the blinking red lights of the warning signs that the U.S. faced ahead of the September 11th terrorist attacks. And yet you've got Trump eager to meet with Putin at a meeting which he's never explained what it's about. I mean, apart from that, we're just going to try and get along. I mean, it's bizarre, is it not?
It is absolutely bizarre. And as you say, the juxtaposition between two things. One, his national intelligence apparatus, his director of CIA, his national security agency, his FBI, and everyone else telling you that we are not prepared for what is going to come to us. The only person who's been the outlier is the director of Homeland Security, and we've already learned that she will say whatever the president tells her to say, to the detriment of the nation. But Donald Trump himself absolutely pretends as if nothing has happened. And now he's going to go meet the actual villain who ordered this attack on American democracy and act as if he is an ally. In fact, he said he's not our enemy. He could be our friend. We'll see. We've already seen the insane level of obsequiousness that he shows to Trump. And it just goes to show we are in danger.
Well, CBS News' Jeff Glore at Trump's golf club in Scotland asked him, you know, who's America's greatest enemy? And right out of his mouth, the first thing was the EU. I mean, that's just mind-boggling.
That is absolutely unbelievable. But, you know, as I just wrote my latest bestseller, which is number 6 on the New York Times bestsellers list, The Plot to Destroy Democracy. And in it, I outline the entire Russian strategy and now Trump strategy for the dismantlement of democracy around the world. And a core component of that is their absolute animosity to the European Union. And Donald Trump seems ready and willing to assist in the destruction of Europe as it has existed since the end of World War II. And that benefits only Russia.
So when Adam Schiff, the minority chair of the House Intelligence Committee, which is for all intents and purposes defunct because the chair is clearly operating in conjunction with the White House,
right.
Adam Schiff said today that Putin is going to eat Trump's lunch just as Kim Jong-un did. And when asked about the – by the way, Trump said that he hadn't thought about it when Jeff Glore asked him about, well, is he going to ask Putin to hand over the 12 GRU officers? But when Schiff was asked about what the meeting would be about and would Trump ask the important questions about meddling in our elections, Schiff pointed out that Trump shouldn't have to ask that question. And the fact that he's been forced into asking that question and has said that he will sort of do it, but in a rather reluctant and dismissive way, again, adds to this suspicion about what is going on here.
Right. And his reluctance, it's less than a reluctance. It's an annoyance that he absolutely has to say anything at all and that he is only being forced to say these things because he expects a pro forma response and that the news media is goading him into it. This is literally almost suspicious to the point where you wonder whether he is actively betraying his oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. No president of the United States would debase the nation by saying that, yes, an attack on the United States is some trifle that he needs to ask his buddy about. It's just mind-boggling, absolutely stunning. And again, this points to that danger that we, as a representative democracy, as a constitutional republic, may in fact be in a situation where we're undermined by the man who has sworn, who was elected, and not by the majority, by the way, who was elected by a fraction of a minority in the Electoral College. Despite his protestations and grand pronouncements. But he, you know, the Constitution always was designed to put in check a person who was elected who was a tyrant or a dictator or a king or of the mindset of one of those three. But what we have now is we also have a Congress that has decided that they will act as a Politburo and put a rubber stamp on anything that this would be autocrat decides.
And again, I'm speaking with Malcolm Nance, a career counterterrorism and intelligence officer with the U.S. government Special Operations, Homeland Security, and intelligence agencies, who has over 33 years of experience in combating radical extremism. He's the author of The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. And his latest book is The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. Now, if this ends up being just like the Kim Jong-un situation where it was a basic and extended photo opportunity, and then immediately when Kim got exactly what he wanted, and now he's basically giving Trump the back of his hand. In Putin's case, my sense is that they will work together. This will be orchestrated to give the impression that Russia is no longer our enemy, which is Trump and Putin's way of basically saying we don't need NATO anymore. Do you think that's what's going on?
I think there's a lot more to it than that, and I think you're absolutely right on that point. So let me take it one step at a time. The Russians have had a strategic plan for certainly the last 15 years about how they want to re-engineer the world. And what's interesting is all of the players on the Russian side are ex-communist. Now, granted, communism collapsed in 1989. They all became rich capitalists. Vladimir Putin may have as much as $200 billion of illicit funds from the liquidating of the Soviet Union back when he was the enforcer of the mayor of St. Petersburg and then the prime minister of Russia and then president of Russia. But their natural inclination as a nation, they are conservative Christians. And over the last 10 years, they have been currying the image in the West that they are the heart of Christian conservatism. And American conservatives have flocked there, both evangelicals and American politicians. Russia views the United States and has always viewed the United States as an obstacle to their greatness. So the Russian strategic goal in this particular instance is that they have to bring us down to a certain extent. And the best way to do that is to use a military strategy that they've developed over the last decade, where they have co-opted a large part of the American population's opinion by using social media and weaponized free speech that was developed. All of these techniques were developed in the Soviet Union's era to discredit democracy as a governing philosophy. But now it could only be executed by an autocrat strongman like Vladimir Putin, former director, KGB officer, former director of Russian intelligence, but with the same goal: discredit democracy, put into power an American ally who is also an equal autocrat, and then dismantle the Western order nation by nation to create an axis of autocracies. It sounds a little ludicrous, but if you look at Europe, most serious European conservative parties are all funded by Moscow, all of them. They have already taken over the government of Hungary with Viktor Orban and the Jobbik Party. It's extremely far-right conservative party. The government of Poland, they are less under the influence of Moscow, but they have the exact same operating philosophy as Trump. Hard-right extremism, hard-right Catholicism. The government of Austria is 100% owned by Moscow. They were funded through Moscow for the election of the Austrian Freedom Party, which was joined with the Austrian People's Party. The Austrian Freedom Party was formed by Nazis in 1952 and is now the ruling body of Austria. And they immediately joined in partnership with United Russia, Putin's party, as soon as they were elected, and then came to Trump Tower to bend at the knee of Donald Trump. The government of Italy is now a hard-right extremist government that started talking about rounding up the gypsies, the Roma, off their streets and deporting them. This is really going badly in Europe, and the only thing that saved Western democracy, as far as I'm concerned, was the common sense of the French people last year in rejecting Marine Le Pen. And her job, after accepting 50 million euros from Vladimir Putin, was to to take France out of the European Union on day one, which would have broken up the European market, and to remove France permanently from NATO, which would have started the dissolution of NATO. This would have created a new alignment of the world away from the Washington, D.C. to European capitals alliance since the end of World War II, and to a Russian-centric poles of right-wing conservatism that would go Moscow, Washington, Europe, and would completely change the way that we live. Global markets would collapse and be broken up, and the dregs would be sold off to the oligarchy. Now, as silly as that sounds, it is in action right now, even as we speak, and you can see Donald Trump relishes being part of that plan.
Well, as silly as it sounds, it is also Stephen Bannon's philosophy and his ideology. Yes. And he's working with those right-wing Italians as we speak and the other, and they are all bound by this notion of white Christian Europeans under attack from foreign influences like Islam and, as you mentioned, the gypsies. So when did Trump buy into this? Because I recently spoke to the former head of the European desk at the National Security Council, and he concluded that indeed Trump has bought into that ideology, which Putin has. And of course, gays are also thrown into the mix in terms of being Untermenschen, as the Nazis referred to them.
Right. Well, you know, Donald Trump was going to decided that he was going to run for president on November 6, 2012. In fact, there's a very little known Facebook post that was made by the head of Russia's Channel One, the guy by the name of Konstantin Rykov. He's known as Putin's Ted Turner, right? He's Putin's propaganda, one of his propagandists, because he runs Russia television for the most part. And he had tweeted 2 days after the election of Trump, the entire four-year plan. And apparently, Rykov said that on the night Mitt Romney lost to Barack Obama, Donald Trump put out a tweet saying, we should march on Washington. This shouldn't happen. I should run for president. Rykov sent a message to him and said, if you intend to run for president, we in Russia will help you, a direct message. Trump sent back to him a photograph of him on his executive jet, giving the thumbs up. 1 year later, Trump is establishing the Miss Universe pageant. The Russian Internet Research Agency is now in operation. Cambridge Analytica gets its first contract to do data analytics on the U.S. election. But the most noteworthy and what I call a critical intelligence indicator of how Russia co-opted Donald Trump's mindset and created a framework for him to exist in, for him to actually, you know, understand where, you know, he belongs to a certain extent, and to influence his decision-making process, is when he went to Miss Universe and he had a private 2-hour off-the-records, nobody taking notes, meeting with the 12 richest oligarchs of Russia, including a personal representative of Vladimir Putin. And for 2 hours, Donald Trump was read the Riot Act on what Russia's positions were on Crimea, what Russia's position was on the European Union, on NATO, on American defense establishment, and the alliance of how the world should be laid out. Interestingly enough, within 3 months, tweets turned to those exact talking points that Vladimir Putin would use. When Crimea was invaded in February, March of 2014, Donald Trump immediately tweeted that Vladimir Putin is a strong president and was completely neutral about Crimea, other than the note that Crimea spoke Russian. It is utterly amazing that for 2 years, the U.S. media could not figure out where Donald Trump's anti-NATO rhetoric started, where Trump's anti-European Union rhetoric started. If you look at the Kremlin talking points for the last 4 years, they are word for word the same, which means that, for example, last week or 2 weeks ago, Trump was asked about Crimea. And, you know, Trump tends to talk off the top of his head. And what he says is what he learns. And the first thing he said about Crimea when asked about would he confront Putin about Crimea was that, well, you know, Crimeans all speak Russian. Essentially, the exact talking point of Vladimir Putin after the invasion, justifying the ethnic annexation of Crimea. It's just utterly amazing. The Nobu restaurant meeting with the 12 oligarchs of Russia is where Trump was not infected, but where he was convinced that Russia is his base, and that so long as he doesn't, so long as he goes along with the base, understands their position, advocates for their position, the great realignment of the world can happen, and it will benefit him and his family. All evidence points to this being true, including the indictments we saw yesterday the indictments against the Internet Research Agency, and this will consume this administration. People will go to prison, and Donald Trump won't survive this as president of the United States. I often say this man is going to give the name Benedict Arnold a run for its money.
And, of course, later that evening after that Nobu meeting with the oligarchs, there was supposed to something supposed to have happened in the presidential suite of the Ritz Hotel. But also it's worth noting that when Donald Trump returned from Russia, he immediately began this canard that the president, Barack Obama, was a Kenyan and started the Bertha movement, which right. in a sense gave right-wing Americans permission to be racist again. And that formed the constituency that is his base to this very day. So it seems like a coincidence. But just in the last few minutes, let's talk about the indictment that came down on Friday from Robert Mueller, announced by the embattled Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. We know that Roger Stone was an interlocutor with Guccifer. He's admitted as much, and I think he's in deep trouble. Right. But also Lee Stranahan of Breitbart News now with the Russians Sputnik. He was also mentioned, and a Florida GOP operative, Aaron Nevins, was mentioned, along with somebody that they didn't name in the indictment, a congressional candidate. So who do you think, because, you know, that's the missing part of the indictment, isn't it? We know what the GRU was up to, but we don't know who their American interlocutors were.
Right. Well, you know, when I wrote 2 years ago, which came out 5 months before or 5 weeks before the election, my previous book, Plot to Hack America, I spelled out that all of the lines of inquiry that we identified yesterday, that were identified in the indictment yesterday, because, of course, you know, I'm not a journalist. I'm an intelligence officer. And in our world, we have the ability to recreate things because there are things which must be there, right? And for the last 2 years, I've said that the GRU were the handlers for WikiLeaks, the FSB, and the Internet Research Agency, of which there's more than one. There's more than one Internet Research Agency. Would have been the people who created what we call propaganda products, but that there would be multiple dirty tricks teams under the Trump administration. And I think everyone that contacted Guccifer 2.0, who I identified very, very early on, I think I identified on the day that he started that this was a GRU operation. Because, as you know, I was writing another book called Hacking ISIS, and we identified the GRU as pretending to be ISIS in two incidents. And so as soon as I heard about the Democratic Party hacking, it became clear that this is Watergate 2.0, which is the name of that first chapter in my book. And the only people that would do this could be the Russians. And then when it came out that it was Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear, you know, cyber malware suites that were carrying this out, clearly Guccifer 2.0 was the GRU. There's just no way about it. But the Americans linked to Guccifer, I think you're going to find that there are a minimum of 5 or 6 independent dirty tricks team. Roger Stone, Lee Stranahan, Nevins. I think it will go as far as implicating in the next round of indictments, absolutely, WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is a Russian intelligence laundromat, but it will also include Cambridge Analytica and all their senior staff, the Trump data team and all of their staff who were involved in handling these products. Those are where you get the mainstream. And then we're going to have Michael Flynn, because Michael Flynn was a coordinator for many of these. Donald Trump Jr., because he appears to have been taken a hand in coordinating at least one particular component of this. All of that being said, you're going to find round number 3 is going to be what I call the tier 3 Americans, which are the lower level Americans who were in direct contact with the Russians. Papadopoulos will come tell his story. Flynn will have a chance to tell his story. Manafort's trial will be on, which will be intense, because they will be burning this guy with everything he ever wrote and said for the Russians. And then when that round is done, I think that by the end of the year, we're going to be at the tier 2 people, Jared Kushner, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, or all the subordinates to Donald Trump. Everything will point to that Donald Trump knew every one of these dirty tricks teams was an operation that the Russians were working for us and with us, and he didn't care when it all cost. And that will be, and again, this nation will go into a crisis the likes that we've never seen, because this is the single most important investigation in the history of the United States.
Well, Malcolm Nance, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
So it's my pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Malcolm Nance, who's a career counterterrorism and intelligence officer with the United States government Special Operations, Homeland Security, and intelligence agencies, who has over 33 years of experience in combating radical extremism. He's the author of The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. And his latest book is The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back assessing and go to the UK to assess the impact of massive demonstrations against Donald Trump and the indignation felt by many in response to Trump posing smugly in Winston Churchill's armchair.